Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. Of course, the news is all fascinated by events at a school where a number of children were murdered by someone who had serious mental issues, and they were able to do that because of gun control. And of course, the real culprit here is a number of things, not just that victim that did these things, but gun control itself. Gun control is to blame. This would not have happened if the teachers, just a few of the teachers, were armed. And those teachers are already supposedly responsible enough to take care of your children. So I would assume that they are responsible enough to handle a firearm. You have your policemen have firearms because they're supposed to be responsible with them. Why aren't your teachers responsible? The same thing when planes are hijacked. Why are these pilots who are responsible for a million-dollar plane flying at 400 miles an hour with hundreds of passengers on board not also responsible to carry a gun on board? If they were doing that, these things would not be happening. You know, my theory about you want your planes safe to travel in, everybody should have a box cutter when they get on board. And anybody trying to hijack the plane would be immediately sliced and diced and would wish he had never tried that. The reality is you're not going to be a safe society until you take back your responsibilities to keep your society safe. Yet I hear people fluctuating back and forth, drifting with every wind of doctrine. One day they're saying, oh, you know, we have to have gun control because of this terrible event. And then the next day, after we explain to them that the reason, you know, all these shootings take place in gun-free zones. These guys don't go to the rifle show, the gun show, to do this. They go to gun-free zones. Even the fellow who went in the Colorado theater, there were other theaters that were nearer to him he could have gone into. But that particular theater had a no-gun policy. No one, even with a licensed concealed weapon permit, were going to be allowed to come into that theater. No guns at all were allowed in that theater. So, lo and behold, that's the theater he chooses. Same thing in the shooting that just took place in a mall here in Oregon. It took place where there was a gun-free mall. You're not supposed to bring, it's a gun-free zone. You're not supposed to bring any guns into the mall. And somehow other people think that this is supposed to keep them safer. And it doesn't. It's just absolutely the opposite. I mean, during Prohibition, when alcohol was illegal, there was a rise in alcoholism. When it was legal, there was an increase in alcoholism. And drugs, how's that drug warfare, you know, your war on drugs working out for you? You make it illegal to have heroin and crack, and that has certainly got it off the streets, right? No, it doesn't. It does absolutely the opposite. But with gun control, the idea of taking guns away from the private citizen, they tried that in England. England for years and years and years, the English bobby didn't have to carry a gun. Why? Because all the English citizens had guns. And when they saw a crime or whatever, they pounded their stick on the ground and blew their whistle, and people came out with a hue and cry to their aid. And they could be policemen unarmed in the streets. Not because there wasn't guns around, there were all kinds of guns around, and that's why they didn't need guns. They weren't required. Now, The English police wear flak vests to work every day. They are armed to the teeth. They are carrying heavy assault rifles. Nobody can come to their aid. I remember a story where there was somebody out in the middle of the public square, standing in the middle of the public square in a small village in England, shooting everybody who came down the street. Anybody who came down the street, he would just shoot them. He stood there for hours with impunity. Nobody had a gun to stop him. That wouldn't happen here in the local town. It's our local town's about 40 miles away. We're out of the regular metropolitan world, and our local town only has 300 people in it. But the last time somebody tried to hold somebody up there, they got shot. And as a matter of fact, they didn't make it out to the next town because everybody was armed. And that makes, and nobody tried it since. That was back in 1957. If you have an armed society, you have a safer society. And anyone who tells you other than that, you know, somebody told me just minutes before the show that somebody from the National Riflemen's Association was asked, and he said no comment. Shame on him. He should have said right out. He says, well, the reason those kids were killed is because your schools are gun-free zones. That's why they go to those places. They go to gun-free zones. They're suicidal. I had somebody I knew. He had punched a hole in the wall. He was trying to quit tobacco, chew and smoking, everything. He had a new child in his family. His first child was born, and he did not want to be addicted to tobacco. So he was going to go and not smoke or chew or any of that stuff anymore. And he was going to get clean so that his daughter wouldn't grow up seeing him addicted to tobacco. And he was getting a little irritable there about 3-4 days into this. But he was sticking to his guns. And he had answered two wrong numbers and had to walk all the way across his shop and quit his work. And he was getting edgy. And he had just had another one. And he got mad and he punched the wall because he was so irritable and upset and, you know, in the throes of trying to quit tobacco. And he asked me to come and repair the wall. And this was many years ago. And I was repairing it. And he told me why he had... I said, this looks like somebody punched this wall. This looks like a fist went into the wall. And he said, yeah, it was me. And he told me the story I just related to you. And I said, you know, you were lucky. You know, this is a shop wall. And so you could see where the studs were, kind of, from the nail holes that had been plastered before. It hadn't been painted. And I said, you're kind of lucky you punched here because, you know, over a few inches you would have hit the stud. And he says, I was mad. I wasn't stupid. So he actually had the forethought of avoiding the stud when he punched the wall. He was looking for an area that he could punch where there was no stud. But he didn't have the foresight not to punch the wall at all. But we do stupid things. But here's these insane people who go to murder somebody before they take their own life, often. And where do they go? They go to gun-free zones. Instinctively, they go where the helpless are. They're after the helpless. I personally think this is demonic, but even if you don't want to believe that, the facts still, they don't go to the gun show to do this. Nobody goes and tries to shoot it out at the gun show. Nobody goes to the police rifle range and try to shoot it out with them. They go where the innocent are, where the unarmed, where the unprotected are. And they go in, and almost with a mystical impunity, this guy walks in and does this. Now, also, there's probably very little doubt that this fellow was on psychotropic drugs prescribed by a doctor, Ritalin, Lexalt, Prozac, and these all list side effects of this suicidal attitude. Anytime you're taking these psychotropic drugs, you're opening the door to evil in your own mind. It's very dangerous, extremely dangerous. And The same way, if you go through the history of these violent situations, they're almost always connected to the use of these psychotropic drugs for so-called depression. Now, a lot of people don't take those drugs and they're depressed, but it doesn't seem to be those that go off on these suicidal bends. It's these other people that are taking these prescribed drugs. So the drugs are a major part of it. Evil is a major part of it. Our sloth is a major part of it. I mean, one of the most armed societies in the world is the Swiss. And in some of the cantons, you can literally buy rocket launchers and mortars and what have you and own them in your own home. It's legal. But you don't have this kind of stuff going on. Because about 2 minutes after it started, the guy would be Swiss cheese because everybody's armed. And it puts an end to it. Now, you're still going to have insanity. You're going to still have evil. But if you unarm yourself, you know, when Christ told Peter to put the sword away, he didn't say throw it away. He said put it away. We're just not going to live by the sword. Now, I didn't think I was going to be talking about this, but I had all kinds of calls just before the show went on the air. And so we kind of drifted over into that because that happens to be a major topic on the minds of people. But I can assure you that if anybody is talking you into gun control, the reason this happened is because you don't have control of your guns. The honest, upright, honorable, responsible people are unarmed. And if they pass any laws for any more gun control than they already have, all you're going to have is more of the same. Everywhere they outlaw guns, everywhere they have outlawed or restricted the ownership and use of guns, crime goes up. That is a statistic all across the board. And if you don't think so, look it up. Those are FBI statistics. Every place that they loosen the right to own guns, or you have more right to carry, more right to own a gun, crime goes down. I can guarantee, if you don't believe me, you go to a neighborhood and you put out a sign in front of your house, we have no guns in this house. We are a gun-free home. And everybody else can put out their NRA stickers. Not that I encourage you to join the NRA. With the guy who said no comment evidently was a member of the NRA. And I think you have all kinds of comments. The people should be ashamed that they have created these guns. You go to Israel. They're in a war zone. The teachers are armed. Every teacher that has the ability to arm themselves and the ability to use competently a weapon, which is about every teacher, is to bring their guns to school and to stay armed. And it cuts down the violence. You have no idea how much violence you have prevented by having guns readily available to Americans. Go ask the Australians how's that working out for them after they turned in their guns. One of the largest demonstrations in Britain was to get their guns back. But once you give them up, they don't give them back. Hitler didn't give them back. Poe didn't give them back. Mao Zedong didn't give them back. They didn't give them back. So once you give them up, they're gone. So anyway, do I advocate violence? Absolutely not. But to not have the ability to stop violence when it's occurring is violence itself. It is aiding and abetting violence. And if you're not going to be responsible enough to arm yourself and to protect your neighbor and protect the weak and protect the innocent, then you are as guilty as the perpetrator of those violence. And so that's where I stand on that. Now, we were also talking about schools in earlier shows about why are your children in school? School, public schools, the basis of public school is the idea of taking funds away from your neighbor's house and paying for free education for you. If you have 5 kids in school, you're probably nowhere near paying the taxes required to keep those kids in school, so somebody else is picking up the slack. You have 2 kids. Many people don't even pay enough in for 1 kid. It's all the other people that they're taxing that allows you to have free education. Did you know that until 1900, in the early 1900s of this last century, Most of the schools in America were private schools. Most of the schools were private schools. Most of the children were educated outside of public schools. Now, the reverse is true. Public schools is where everybody goes for education. And they're terrible. They're dens of immorality. And by the time you get into high school, they dumb down your children. They condition your children to subservience. You can't have leaders in grade school. Everybody must be subservient to the teacher. They must learn to do what they're told. When the bell rings, they do what they're told. That's not good. There's no individuality. You're no one left behind, no one gets ahead. I gave an example. I have a collection of school books, and I have a fifth grade math book. And the first five problems on the first page of that math book, I took it to high schools. And I tried to get any of the high school students to answer all five questions. None of them were able to answer all five questions correctly. The vast majority, if not all of them, could not get a passing score. On those five questions at the first level of fifth grade, first day of first grade math, they could not answer the questions. They could not solve the problems. And these are high school students. The vocabulary level in the 1920s for kids who are fourth and fifth graders exceeds that of what many of high school students are now graduating with. That's just the way it is. You can check it out. Now, if you go to European countries, some of the socialist countries there have fairly decent public school education, but that's it. That's socialist. The basic message is that, you know, someone, and I don't know if I talked here on this show, but it was something that came up recently where I was talking to somebody from Alaska, and he was upset at my article, The Ugly Capitalist, which was actually a pro-capitalist article and anti-socialist article. And he was complaining about that because he had been to the socialist nation of New Zealand. And the socialist nation of New Zealand had total medical care. It would even do total dental care. And even for strangers, people who were not citizens, they would actually take care of dental problems while you were there. And he said that was a great country to live in, except for the fact that he didn't realize it, but every citizen, every child born in New Zealand is in debt more per capita than Americans. And we know that we're in debt a ridiculous amount. Every child born in America is born with over $40,000 debt on his head. The moment you get him a birth certificate, he is now owes $40,000, and he will never pay that off. And they will see to it that you never pay that off, because they want you in debt. They want you in bondage. They have you. You can't get out. You can't just say, I don't want to be a member anymore. You're in debt. Who's going to pay that debt? Christ, you got Christ coming up and going to have to pay it again for you? You went back in. You chose to go back to the bondage of Egypt. And you did this because you listened to great swelling words where they promised you liberty. Liberty, freedom from your responsibilities is what they promised you. And they delivered you into bondage. And that's where you are at today. And now you wonder, and what you're doing in these schools is you're living by the sword. You're saying, I want this guy to go down to my neighbor's house, all my neighbor's house, and force them to pay in money so that I can have free education for my children. Those guys can do that because they go house to house with a gun. And now they don't have to, because they, you know, a few guys don't pay their property tax and they take their house away. So now everybody lives in fear, and they establish their government by fear. So everybody pays because nobody wants to lose their house. Because if we don't pay, if I don't pay for your child's education by paying the property tax, they will come and take my whole house away, and they will give me nothing for it. In some states, you'll get something after they've got all their money, but in many states, you get nothing. They take your house away. They take it from widows and orphans often, because they're often the ones who can't pay the property tax. And you rob them so that you can have free education. And you don't think there's a price to pay? Why did God let this happen? Because he told you. You go and elect men that exercise authority to rule over your neighbor and you in order to get benefits and security. When you cry out, I will not hear you in that day. He says this over and over again in the Bible. I will not hear you because you have rejected him already. And you wonder why, you know, why didn't they see that? Why didn't they see that coming? I remember years ago, I was staying in San Francisco. I was a young man. I was 17. I was out of high school, but I was 17. I'd gone up there on my motorcycle and tooling around. And I went down on Market Street, and I was on foot now. The apartment I had was down on Powell Street, which is quite a ways away. But I went to Bunny's Waffles Cafe. I love waffles. And so I went there. I was going to have some waffles in the evening. I went in and had my meal, and I was going out. And it was rush hour. And the street, you know, Market, it was just packed with people everywhere. It's one of those film scenes where, you know, everybody's walking and just walking heads everywhere. And the buses were bumper to bumper down Market Street, taking commuters away. And all the way across, kitty corner across the street, across this huge thoroughfare, I happened to notice two guys standing talking to each other. Real tall guy and real short guy, and they were talking, and I noticed them. And my attention, like all these hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on the street, I noticed those two guys. And I kind of thought it was funny that I noticed them, but I didn't pay any attention to it because I didn't know what it meant. But anyway, I started walking home and just kind of taking my time, walking down the street, weaving in and out of all the people that were there commuting. And I stopped and looked in a window somewhere along the way, and I... out of the corner of my eye, I saw one of those guys that I saw kitty corner across that street. Now, across that street is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet. That's a real wide boulevard. So that I could barely recognize the guy at that distance. And here he was walking about 30 feet behind me. And I thought that was interesting. I just noticed him, but I didn't pay any attention, didn't think about it. I just noticed, oh, that's the guy, you know, kind of, and not even giving it hardly a passing thought, but I noticed it. And then I started walking and just walking along, and then I looked across the street. Now, there's still hundreds of people on the street everywhere. And I noticed the guy that had been talking to the guy that's behind me is across the street, parallel walking with me. Now, this is a wide boulevard, multiple lanes. And the guy is a good distance away, and there's hundreds of people around him, and I still notice him. Why am I noticing these guys? Well, it ended up that eventually down on Powell Street, there was hardly anybody, and I knew that they were hanging a little farther back and trying to be a little more inconspicuous, but they were following me. They were following me. Oh. They were going to mug me. How did I know that? How did I know that ahead of time? And, of course, eventually there was a showdown, and I was ready for them, and I held my hand in my pocket. I had an old Boy Scout pocket knife in there, no gun, but they didn't know it wasn't a gun. And I backed into the corner of a vestibule there, and the guy come running around, and I'm facing him. And then suddenly he's afraid. He doesn't know what's in my pocket. And we had an interesting conversation. I won't tell you the whole story now. I'll tell it some other time. But anyway, he backed away. Actually, eventually, he backing up as I am standing there talking to him. Saying some of the things that I did. And I was a little nervous at this point. Cause, I mean, this guy come running around the corner with an intention of knocking me in the head and robbing me. And I told him, you know, he actually tried to invite me out for a beer. I was 17 at the time. And I says, well, I don't want to go. My big brother's inside waiting for me. But that guy across the street will go with you. His partner was across the street, tried to wave him down, but he was so anxious to catch me in that vestibule and knock me in the back of the head. But he didn't come near me as long as I had my hand in the pocket, because he thought it could be a gun. And I was standing my ground. But the point of the story is, how did I know? How did I know these guys were stalking me? How did I spot them before I even started? Because they were looking at me. There's a mystical thing where you should be able to know when the enemy is sneaking up on you. The hair raises on the back of your neck. And the more you become aware around your surroundings, the more you know when that's about to happen. When there is doom lurking to seize upon you. And you can prepare. But I can tell you this, if you will not face the truth of the reality of your world and what part you're playing in it, you will not know when evil is coming and stalking you. You will not sense them coming, because they will not seem to be a difference. They will not be a contrast, because you yourself are evil. If you're coveting your neighbor's goods, if you're desiring benefits at your neighbor's expense, if you're sending out people like a beast or roaring lion to take from your neighbor to guarantee you your social welfare, you will not see evil when it's coming. You will vote for the beast that intends to destroy you. You will elect the murderers to be your leaders. And you will wonder why they're murdering you when they do. The communists used to talk about useful idiots. Stalin talked about useful idiots. That was all the socialists that allowed the Communist Party to seize power in Russia. He referred to those people, those socialists, as useful idiots. They were useful for him to get into power, but they were the first ones that he wanted to get rid of, because they were activists. He doesn't want activists. He doesn't want people that have energy. Unfortunately, their energy was devoted to coveting their neighbor's goods. You cannot be a socialist and a Christian. Get your children out of public school. If you need help doing it, gather together with other people and work together. If you're retired and you want to be in one of our congregations, which you can't belong to one of our congregations. One of our congregations is just people gathering together, thinking not just about themselves, but about their neighbors. And not just their immediate neighbors, but their neighbors on the other side of the planet. They want them to understand the spiritual significance of loving your neighbor as yourself. I pointed out this earlier on another show, that the same word that they translate into love that Christ is always saying, when Paul uses the word, they call it charity. You can sit in your pew and think you love your neighbor, but you can't imagine that love is charity unless you're actually doing something. So whenever Christ says what Paul calls charity, they translate it love. So that you can think, oh, well, I love him. I love those people. Oh, I love those. But you don't, because you don't do anything. Help people get their children out of public education. Help get your parents, take care of your parents and the elderly in your community without collecting Social Security. Now, if you have to collect it, I'm not going to argue with that. You paid into it, you say, and you have a right to it. But that's not the way it works. It's still operating by force. For hundreds and hundreds of years, for centuries, they had a system called Corban where you sacrificed to take care of the needy of your society. And people took care of the needy of their society through their churches, through the church in the wilderness, through the Levites, through the contributions to take care of the needy of their society and what James calls pure religion. They did this for century upon century upon century. But Herod thought they should have a system where they forced the contribution to make sure that everybody was paying their fair share. But in order to get them to do that, they had to get them to sign up. And once they signed up, and what is happening when they're signing up? They are coveting their neighbor's goods. And because of that, they themselves will become merchandise, according to Peter. That's what he says. You'll become merchandise, human resources. And Paul says the same thing, quoting David. What should have been for your welfare shall become a snare. Proverbs says the same thing. Beware of the common purse. Do not become a part of it when sinners entice you. and say, let's all have one purse. It runs towards death. And this whole nation, this whole world has gone that way. And we have to repent and turn around. The only way we can do that is if we start coming together and helping one another. And let's talk about ways of doing that when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom.
Well, glad to be back. We'll talk a little bit more about some of these things. There's a spiritual significance to taking back your responsibilities. I talk a lot about people being spiritually constipated. That's my polite way of saying some people are full of it. The reality is that in order to get our spiritual systems back on track, we have to start forgiving and giving. These are the ultimate survival tools. I just heard where somebody on our network has now purchased, I don't know if it's like 20 acres or 30 acres or something up in the woods, and they want to create a survival retreat because they expect all kinds of bad things to happen. They're only about 40 miles outside of a major town. And they put an open invitation on our network for people to join them. Well, I can guarantee you that on our network, everybody you probably don't, that is on our network, you don't want them to join you. Although there's a lot of really great people on our network, we don't filter them out. We don't exercise authority. We are back to this individual responsibility. And we don't send out blanket invitations to people because everybody is not of the same spirit. And so how do you know who is of that spirit? Well, who is giving up their life so that others may have life more abundant? Who has that Christ nature of sacrificing themselves? Who walks in humility, or who is trying to always prove they are right and everybody else is wrong? Now, I may be accused of that, but really all I'm doing is bearing witness to what I see is right. I don't require anybody to believe it. But, the fact is, I use the Bible all the time. And I do this partly because of the fact that the Bible is absolutely full of good advice. Wisdom is just rampant in the Bible. But most people are completely unaware of this common theme that you find throughout the whole Bible, about individual responsibility, about doing right by your neighbor and taking care of the needs of people through faith, hope, and charity. This is a huge aspect in the Bible. This is what they were doing when they came out of Egypt. They weren't going to get the leeks and onions, the benefits of Pharaoh anymore. They were going to have to take care of themselves, protect themselves, be righteous unto themselves. They had to attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, and mercy, and faith. The one common thing that you found throughout Israel in the early days was a hue and cry if there was injustice. Every time you see them falling away from that hue and cry, where they didn't come to the aid of somebody, they started going the ways of Sodom and Gomorrah. It was because they had moved to a socialist state, where they were not going to be responsible for each other anymore. They were saying, it's not my job. And that is what is constipating to your spirit. It keeps your spirit from flowing with the true energy of God and the righteousness of God and the protection of God. Because if you don't, you will not have the protection of God. That's it. That's as simple as that. You will not have his divining spirit. And I've told stories before, and I could tell you dozens and dozens of them, how if I didn't have that spirit with me, I would have been toast. I would have been probably beat up and maybe even killed. And I admit wholeheartedly that the only reason that spirit was with me is the grace of God. I didn't deserve it. But I didn't drive it away, at least not all the time. I'm a sinner just like everybody else. But so was David, but he was a repentant sinner. And it made a difference. You know, I talked to you about Proverbs in the first part of the show. I mentioned a little bit of it. But specifically, it goes on to say, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Consent not. Make a covenant with them not. Make no covenants with them. This is a theme in the Ten Commandments. Don't make agreements that bind you up, that cause you to have to perform in a certain way for somebody else's decisions or will. And that's what you've done. Your patriotism has drawn you into that. Jesus said, swear not, not at all. James said, above all else, stop the taking of oaths. Yet you all do it, yet you all say you are Christians and following Christ. You cannot be both. You're not supposed to pray to anybody but your Father in heaven, but you're praying to your Father in these governments of the world that exercise authority one over the other. It's not to be that way with you. And it goes on to say, if they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, the whole of those that go down into the pit. What are they talking about? You don't do any of that, do you? You don't do that, do you? Well, actually, you know, the metaphors of the language, they're telling you wait for blood. In other words, let's cleverly set up a system where we have one purse. And that's what they get down to. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoils and cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. So what they're doing is they're setting up a system where they all have one purse and they will all become wealthy because the rich will have to pay in as well as the poor. And that's their plan. They always, you hear that all the time. Oh, the rich are the problem. We need to tax the rich, tax the rich. If the rich don't have a right to their property, then the poor have no right to their property. You have to forgive the rich for their shortcoming. The fact is that if you poor people would get together the way the early church did, you would be rich. You worry about corporations having so much power. You could come together as a people and form a co-op and create your own businesses. All you have to do is come together. That's what made Rome great. As they would get 1,000 people together to go and mine somewhere, or 1,000 people together to build a ship that would go out and trade, and they would make a fortune because they knew how to work together. You guys are all out there trying to make it yourselves. You're not working together. You're not pooling your efforts because you don't know how to forgive and give. Can you imagine 100 people pool their efforts together? The boat people that came over here with nothing but the clothes on their back, you go to them 5 years, 10 years later, and they're all well-to-do. How'd they do it? Families worked together, started business, pinched their pennies, paid for some of their kids to go on to college. They came back, they helped with the family business, and they all became wealthy. As soon as they got one business going, then they got another business going, and they got another business going because they knew how to work together. Because of our affluence, because we've been taught wrongly, when the kids grow up today, they all go do their own thing. They don't work together. They're all divided. Families are divided. Communities are divided. Corporations come together, and they overwhelm you. They can run you out of business because you don't work together. You could work together, and you could all be successful, but you don't know how to work together, but you better learn how fast. But you don't do it with one purse. You do it with cooperation. You do it by rebuking those that are lazy and by strengthening those that are not. You know, you're not just supposed to feed everybody who's poor. If they don't want to work, you know, I always remember my son went on a trip over to Western Oregon, and the first thing that he ran into when he got off the bus was guys begging. And he says, well, I don't really have anything, but I can maybe, you know, we can go buy you some food. And the guy said, oh, no, I can get lots of food. I'm just looking for money. And then my son's kind of a good one for conversation, and he strikes up a conversation. This guy makes his living begging. He goes around and begs money from people. Then he goes and gets free food from over here. You get a free shower over here. You get a free place to stay over here. And he says, but don't ever go out into the country because those people want you to work. He's a professional beggar, and they make good money doing it. Why are you giving money to him? He's a lazy freeloader. But he looks like somebody who might need help. And, of course, he's got all the sob stories because he's a liar, too. How come you can't tell he's a liar? How come you can't tell the ones who really need help and the ones that don't? You should be able to tell that difference. And I tell you, spiritually, you will be able to start to tell that difference. Right now in this world, an absolute total liar could run for president and get elected. Is somebody falling over?
Sorry. Yes.
I said that. Next thing I hear is crashing.
Oh, my.
Anyway.
It was either that or laugh completely out loud. At
okay.
I thought I'd just fall over instead.
Yeah, I didn't say that a liar did get elected. I just said it could happen. It's possible.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to call anybody a liar. Actually, I do it all the time. But anyway, it goes on here. It says, cast in thy lot among us, let's have all one purse. He's talking socialism here. My sons, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, yet they get caught. You should be able to see this coming, but you get caught. And, of course, that's what's happening with the gun controllers. They're going to say, oh, we need to make these guns illegal. We need to stop these guns and everything. They don't realize that when, you know, the whole purpose of this country or the whole reality of this country even coming about as a free nation at one time, I'm not going to say it's a free nation now, but at one time, was because when they came to collect the guns, the people said no. That's what they were doing at Concord and Lexington. You can't have the guns. We're not giving them up. We're going to stay armed. And that's what it was all about. Today, now we got people with absolutely mindless approach to things. And that's why I point out the reason this happened at that school was gun control. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if several of the people that were at that school were probably ex-military or at least had some knowledge of firearms, although the educational system is racked with liberals who think, oh, we don't want to own a gun. Guns are bad. If I need help, I'll just call a policeman. He's got a gun. That's why you call him. You don't call him because he has a badge. You call him because he has a gun. But you're too cowardly, too sniveling to own a gun yourself and to protect other people. You want somebody else to do it because you don't understand hue and cry that makes a free nation a free nation. But the reality is, if there were teachers in that school that had guns, that guy would have been stopped. And a few of those guys get stopped, they won't go there no more. They won't go there. They'll go down to your PETA rallies or someplace where people say, oh, we don't want to have guns. And they'll shoot them. But personally, I think you should get your kids out of the school altogether. That's the real Christian solution. No Christian should have their kids in a public school. And they should work very hard, and all you other Christians who don't even have kids should help them get their kids out of school, even if you have to start private schools, and work together to do it. I mean, that's the way we used to do it in this country. Like I said, more than half of all schools were private schools, and far more than half of everybody who was educated and learned to read outside of public schools for over a century. That's the way it was in this country. What happened? Why did we get away from that? It goes on to say, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy for gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. That's what you do. That's how you finance your schools. You take away the blood and sweat and life of your neighbor, so that you can have your precious benefits. But it's your blood that will be accounted for. You think there's a spiritual significance of the fact that your kids are in the public school paid for by taking away the blood and sweat and toil of your neighbor who may be homeschooling, maybe sending their kids to school. They have no voucher. They have to pay for your kids and their kids. You've been taking their blood away for years so that you can have these ridiculous public schools that teach lies to your children and raise them up to be ignorant. And then you're surprised that someone came and took the blood of your children? You don't think there's a spiritual significance to it? I mean, this is what Proverbs is saying. It will be your own blood. Your own blood that will be taken. There are spiritual quantum levels of existence here. This is what's happening. Wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief places and concourse in the opening of the gates in the city. She uttereth her words saying, but nobody's listening. You keep doing it. You keep taking away from your neighbor, thinking that you're getting something for free. Well, now there's the price you pay. You've rejected God by electing your leaders who can exercise authority to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. And you have lived by the sword. You have depended on men with guns to collect your offerings and the offerings of your neighbor. You did not want to live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. You did not seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And now you have a taste of blood. The blood that you have taken from your neighbor has been taken from you. And you cry out to God, why did you let this happen? Because you have already rejected me. I told you that when you went this way and elect men who could exercise authority one over the other, that I would not hear your prayers. I cannot hear your prayers. You are the antithesis of me. I am a giver of life. You are a taker of life. What did you expect was going to happen? And the fact is, you've only seen the tip of the iceberg. It's going to get a lot worse than that. Psalm 69:22 says, let their table become a snare before them, and that which should have been for their welfare, let it become a trap. And it is. And you're trapped in the very net of your own making. And you want to be free? Unweave that net. Make a system. Create a system. A network of people who care about their neighbor as much as they care about themselves, who actually contribute daily, helping people get their children out of public schools where they can be safe in the home. And commune with other people who will go that extra mile, do the extra work, make the extra sacrifice. There's your salvation, in doing what Christ said. Not just hearing what he said, but doing what he said. In the book, Thy Kingdom Come, in the back of the book, there's a section where we have listed names. You can actually find it on the web, Appendix 2. And we go through different words like authority, what he says about authority, what he says about commandments, what he says about consent. And, of course, that would also include what he says about swearing. But there's a whole section on what he says about doing. Doeth. And there are dozens and dozens of quotes from Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Ephesians, Colossians, James, Peter, the epistles of John, Titus, Hebrews, James again, and Revelations, where it talks about you have to be a doer. You have to be a doer. If you're not, you're not counted as his. But what are you doing? Coveting your neighbor's goods. He says you can't have eternal life if you do that. If you want to have eternal life, you have to keep the commandments. Because if you go around coveting, that constipates your soul and your spirit, and his spirit will not flow through you, and you will not see the man who's sneaking up behind you. You will not see evil coming. You will live in the shadow, and you will live by the shadow. If you want light, you must live it. You must give it. You must forgive all those who would abuse you. people who hate the tax collectors and the government who exercises authority, that's no good. You have to forgive them too. Realize that you have been a part of that sloth. Beg for your own forgiveness. Be humble in your spirit. The poor, someone quoted this week, they said, blessed are the poor. And it does say that in Luke. But in Matthew, in the same quote, it says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Poor in spirit. And it means the same as blessed are the poor in Mark. In Luke. But that's not, but it means blessed are the poor in spirit in Luke. Because that's what he actually said. What did he mean by poor? He used a word that means extremely poor. This is not just somebody who's down on their luck and maybe a little short of cash. This is someone who is a beggar in the street who has nothing and realizes he has nothing. And he says, I need help. He's a beggar, beggarly poor in spirit. And realizes you don't have the spirit of Christ in you. You have to beg for it. You have to yearn for it. You have to desire it. And every time he gives you something of that spirit of his, you have to give it away. You have to share it with others. You have to speak out. And so that when they ask you, you can give the answer that Christ would give. If you don't have a coat, you don't have a sword, sell your coat and buy one and keep it. Don't use it out of anger, don't use it out of resentment, don't use it out of fear. Use it for righteousness, because it's your responsibility to protect the innocent, to protect the weak. Don't give up your responsibility to anyone. These are God-given rights and responsibilities. If you give up God's gift, will he give you another one? If you don't use the gifts that God has given you, will he give you another one? Will he give you more? According to his parable, no. If you don't use what God has given you, if you hold it in low regard, then he will not give you any more. And if you don't look for his ways, seek the kingdom of God, the right to be ruled by God, and stop making covenants with those who promise you benefits. Real quick, I can read that from you for you in Peter, where he says, but there shall false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers amongst you, who privately bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall evil be spoken of. And through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, what shall he do with you who sat and ate with rulers with great appetite and did not do what Proverbs says? If you sit and eat with a ruler and you be a man of appetite, put a knife to your throat, for he serves you deceitful dainties. They are covetous ways. Give them up. Gather together so you do not need them, so that no one wants or lacks, that everyone has an opportunity to work together. And let the Spirit of God, the Spirit of Christ, flow in you and in all the things that you do. Until we meet again, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you. Are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Oh, I was looking for your outro.
I caught you off guard again. I don't know how I look at the clock. I don't look at it until right at the moment that I have to. Something says, look at the clock, and there it is. Time's up.
It's your angels talking to you in your ear.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because I think I should give you more warning, but God never gives me warning. He just says, look at the clock. I got 10 seconds.
Perfect. It's always
okay.
Perfect.
Okay, always. So till next week. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.